Welcome to our program today. This is sponsored by the Association of Gastrointestinal Motility Disorders. Oh, I got it all in one breath. My name is Mary Angela DeGrazia Zatucci. I'm a longtime patient with multiple digestive motility disorders. And along with us today, we have Melissa. She is co-facilitating this program. And I am going to turn the program over to Melissa.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, my name is Melissa Adams Van Houten, and I am a gastroparesis patient and advocate, diagnosed a little more than 3 years ago. I'd like to welcome you to the support call for those who have been recently diagnosed. And before we get started, we'd like to give you just a little bit of background about the AGMD. The Association of Gastrointestinal Motility Disorders is an international nonprofit that's been around for more than 25 years. It serves as an educational resource and as a forum for patients and families of patients living with digestive motility disorders and diseases. The AGMD offers a variety of programs, support programs, to help you get the support you need. And you can find some of those on the website at www.agmd-gimotility.org. And just a couple of kind of ground rules and pointers before we start the call. We ask that during the program you state your first name only every time you talk, and that way we will be better able to associate the voice with the person who is actually speaking. And we also ask that you do not give out your personal contact information and that you do not request any other person's contact information during the program. If you are interested in getting in touch with someone you hear speaking or getting some more information, you can contact the AGMD and Ms. Mary Angela will try to facilitate that communication. And finally, one kind of additional rule here, we also ask that you refrain from using any profanity when speaking, just out of respect for some of the other members on the call. And if at any time during the program you have difficulty jumping into the conversation or you feel like you're not being heard, please feel free to call out my name, Melissa, or Mary Angela's name. And I think also Miss Laura. Laura is on the call, so you can call out her name.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, Miss Laura. I think that's it for the ground rules. So today, I was kind of hoping, well, let me say first of all that if you do not like the topic that I'm suggesting today, please feel free to change it. Our main goal today is to get your questions answered and to talk about the topics that you see as relevant and important as a newly diagnosed person. So I'm going to suggest a topic, but we do not have to stay with that topic, and please feel free to change it or interrupt at any point if you have something pressing. But I did kind of want to talk a little bit today about how to make the most of your doctor's visits. I know that a lot of people that I see in the online support groups have a really hard time knowing how to get ready for the doctor's visit, first of all, and then also how to talk to that doctor and get the information and support from the doctor's office that they need initially. A lot of people come into the groups and are newly diagnosed and just don't know enough about their illness to even be able to know what to track, what questions to ask, and what's kind of important to cover during the visit. So I guess I would start with the question, do any of you track your symptoms or your foods or your medications or anything like that? And if so, how do you go about keeping track of the state of your condition and maybe some of the things that affect it so that you can present that in a meaningful way to the doctor? Do any of you have any suggestions or any issues with trying to do that?
Well, this is Laura. Hi. Was someone else talking? Hello?
Hi, Ms. Laura. I can hear you.
Okay. I'm sorry. I couldn't tell if anyone was talking. Tracking symptoms is really a hard thing. Unfortunately, I've been a type 1 diabetic for almost my whole life, and that's something that as a diabetic, to figure out what's wrong with you, basically, you kind of have to figure that out on your own. What you're doing is causing it. They don't have all the answers. So it was something that I was able to roll into my gastroparesis part. But it is very difficult for the everyday person who's never done it before. One of the best things that I found, even though it really has nothing to do with gastroparesis, they have some, I don't know who they are, there's a group of books out there, you get them online, any bookstore, where one of them is the ultimate like calorie carb counter. It's made by the same people, that you can look up almost any food in the world, and it'll give you all the info about it. Now, not that I'm saying those are the books, but in those books, they have ones called food journals, and they're really made for people that are dieting, kind of. But it's so easy to take their formed book and switch it over to what we do and what we need to do. And they have little small ones, too, so you can, you know, you don't have to carry around a regular, you know, 5x7 book. They have a little, like, 3x5 hand one you can use. And I found that even for the doctors, which have said it has been unbelievably the most helpful thing they have found in treating me, is to, I take it with me. If I put something in my mouth, I just write down the time and what it is. I don't go into detail, you know, just I ate or I drank, you know, a glass of water or a bottle of water. And then if I had a symptom, put it in the same place. And it worked out so well because I was able to go to the doctor and go, well, I noticed, you know, every time I do this, that happens, and every time I did this, that happens. Or, and it's just, it's very helpful, and that's an easy tool you can use. And I just found converting it to whether it be what you're eating, I mean, your bowel movements, whatever you want to track, you know, it's easier to do. You can just cross out the top column and change it to what you're using if you want. That's just something anybody could pick up if they were trying to do this, keep it in one place. And just my thought.
Absolutely. I do that, too. I keep, well, I did it first anyway. I can't say I'm religiously do that anymore. But at first, I tracked every single thing I ate and tried to note any kind of reaction that I had to it. Or, you know, if I took a medication, I would try to write down how did I respond to this medication. If I took it late, did it make a difference? Just anything to kind of notice patterns that were going on that I could bring to the doctor and say, hey, I think this might be what's happening. Does anybody else have any tips about that or any questions?
Yeah, my name is Doug. My wife, Lori, has gastroparesis, and this will be my second call that I've listened in on. But I track her for about the last 3 months, and we're trying to come up with something that would be rhyme or reason for her symptoms. But, you know, good days, bad days, whatever. But nothing seems to make any difference. You know, the good days come once in a while, but the bad days are always there. So it doesn't seem to really matter on what she eats, when, or what we do. It just comes on instantly, and she just could get sick at any time. Right now, she had to leave the call. She got so sick. So I just thought I'd throw that out there.
Very sorry to hear that. Yeah, you know, I've found the same thing, honestly, and that's why I stopped tracking a lot of it, because I, for the most part, I could never see any real pattern except if I missed a medication or took it late, and then possibly. Mm-hmm. But I've also, I prefer written, but I do record it on the computer as well. But I've also taken note if it was like a particularly painful day. Just for my own recollection, so when I'm talking to the doctor, I can look back through and say, well, you know, 7 out of the last 10 days have been really extremely painful. Can we do something about this? Or just to have sort of some evidence that, well, it wasn't just what I thought. I actually tracked this. It's here, and I can show you this was a very high pain day for me. I don't know if there are any, like, phone apps or online apps where you can track gastrointestinal symptoms. I saw one the other day. I can't remember what it was now, but it's the first one I had seen, and it did not have gastroparesis listed as a condition, but it did have some other conditions. Is there anybody who uses a phone app or some kind of online app to track symptoms or medications?
Hi, Melissa. This is Brittany.
Hi, Ms. Brittany.
I actually used a phone app for a while to track my pain because I was going to a new pain doctor. And even if you can't, and I just want to throw this part out there too, but even if you can't figure out a rhyme or reason for, you know, your symptoms or your pain or whatever's going on, a lot of times just even having that evidence for the doctor gives some sort of clarification for them, because a lot of times when you're in so much pain or, you know, experiencing nausea all the time, you know, you tell your doctor, oh, I'm experiencing, you know, nausea every day. And not all doctors, but a lot of them look at you like, yeah, right. But if you have the evidence written down, it kind of, it helps them as well as you to really say, okay, yeah, she did have nausea every day. But I did, like I said, I did use an app to track my pain. And I just went on the app store and searched pain tracker, and they had a bunch of them on there. And I've done the same thing for food journals. And there's a bunch on there, whether it's there's free ones, there's one to pay for. And I also did a quick Google search to just Google like best food journal and or best free food journal, I should say, because I'm cheap like that. And they rank them, and then they'll also usually there's tons of lists out there, but you can pull one up and they'll give you a description of how the app works, what's good about it, what's bad about it, and also give you suggestions if you did want to pay for one to go that route. But I know on my pain tracker app, besides pain, it also had a place where you could put in other symptoms. That's why I liked it, because then I could also note my nausea, my distension, you know, et cetera. And that was one of the free ones that came up like first or second on the on the search in the app store. So
absolutely.
Just want to throw that out there.
I just want to add something to this. Excuse me. One of the things I've used is, for example, if the belly is very distended, I take pictures of it, because if I'm going to the doctor and it's maybe a little distended but not to the degree that it would be when it's exacerbated, there you have a photo evidence of it. I've even taken videos, because I have dystonia too, where they can see the body in action. I know it can't, you can't show a picture of pain, but perhaps you can show a picture or a video of that person in so much distress, because the face is going to look different when you're in pain.
Absolutely.
That's one thing. And the other is what I like to do in preparation for a doctor visit, and what I've learned at the beginning, is to be very specific when you're talking. So if you say your stomach hurts, but you're pointing to the lower part of your abdomen, that's not your stomach. That's not where it's located. So it's important to point where the problem is or where you're feeling it. Sometimes it can be misleading, because you're feeling the pain everywhere. It can be diffuse. The other thing is to be a little more specific as to when you say you're in pain, well, to one person, it may feel like a cramp. To another, it could be debilitating. So I like to use very descriptive words when I'm at a doctor's appointment to explain the intensity, the duration, the frequency of it. Yeah. The more specific you are, the better able you are to communicate with your physician, and for that physician to truly understand in the capacity that they can what you're going through.
I agree. And another thing right along those lines that I was kind of unprepared for my first couple of visits, the doctor asked me, how long after I ate before the pain started, how long did the pain last, the distension too, when you're bloated, how bloated are you, do you get bloated immediately, does it go away in an hour or does it take a day? And those were questions I was not prepared for my first and second visits. So I found those a little difficult to answer. Those kinds of things, tracking those things might be helpful as well. Anybody else have a question or a tip along those lines? What about medical records? Do you all have copies of your medical records or know how to get your medical records and know how to get them to your new doctor, your new GI, what kind of things you should send over to him? I was thinking that maybe one helpful tip there. I sometimes go into the doctor's office and wonder why I've bothered to send the medical records over, because they don't have them up and they don't look at them. But actually my newest doctor told me that even though he sometimes doesn't have a chance to look at my records before he gets into the room, he does go back and review them after I've left and compares what I've said now to what is in my records. So that's one thing that kind of surprised me, that he noted that probably people are aware that he hasn't read through the records sometimes, but that he does do that at some point. That made me feel a little more comfortable. And also, I would say that I've found it pretty helpful, even though I've sent all my medical records over, or all the major medical records to the newest doctor and the specialists, I still go in with like a one sheet piece of paper where I have all the major procedures I've had done listed, and the dates that they were done, and if there were any, you know, amazing results that came of those or significant results that came of those, I also have those listed just as a quick reference. So if he asks me, oh, when was your last colonoscopy? It's right there in front of me, and I can take a look at when that happened. That's just some of the things I've felt helpful. Anybody else want to add anything to that?
Hi, this is Laura again.
Quiet. Hi, Laura.
Just a quick thought on not so much what we're bringing to the doctor, but making sure you're going to the right doctor. Now, I know with gastroparesis, countrywide, you know, just like a old Crohn's disease or something like that, we should be able to go to a gastroenterologist, and they should know what we're talking about. Unfortunately, it is a newer disease in the scheme of the medical field. And, you know, if your gastroenterologist is over 40, all he's learned about it is the one patient he saw a month ago, maybe. Just a maybe. I mean, there's no guarantee. But calling a doctor's office, if you call a gastroenterologist office and you ask them if that doctor sees patients with gastroparesis, 99% of the time, their receptionist is going to say, yes, he covers everything and make you an appointment. You need to stop them and say, no, how many gastroparesis patients does he have? How long has he had them? Chances are you're not going to want to even go, maybe. Your best bet for this disease are motility specialists and now neurogastroenterologists. Not very easy to find, because the neurogastroenterologists are the top doctors in the country in GI right now with all of the motility disorders. And, you know, there are, you know, we, unfortunately, I know how bad gastroparesis can be, but it's, you know, it's hard to understand. There are over 5,000 other GI issues that your GI, you know, has to deal with, maybe. So finding somebody that specializes in what we're doing will save you more time, more effort, more aggravation, more tears, you know, more anything if you do the homework before you go or before you get the appointment. And even if you're referred by another doctor, ask that doctor right out, how many patients does he have? Oh, I don't know. Well, does he have a lot? You know, is this a normal thing for him? Get a little info about the doctor. You have every right. Your life is in their hands. You have every right to, like, interview a little bit and find out who you're going to see, to make sure you're not wasting, you know, whether you say the insurance, whoever, your money. This is your money. You're the customer. But, you know, it's our own, it is our responsibility to make sure we're kind of finding the right person to help us, as opposed to going to the wrong person, because you can be the best prepared person in the world. And depending on the doctor, if he doesn't know or he doesn't know what to do, you may get, you know, a very disappointing appointment and have to start all over.
Yeah.
Just a little experience out there from that.
This is Marianne. The other thing that I just want to add is I think many of the phone calls that I get are frustration because when they do find an expert in neurogastroenterology or digestive motility disorders, they can't get an appointment right away. So when you're doing this, you can anticipate that there could be possibly 3 months or more for a wait. What I suggest is that you find a couple of them, make the appointments, and ask them if you can be put on their cancellation list, if you have that flexibility, and call them periodically just to see if you've got, if they've gotten any, if they received any cancellations. But just even people who are seasoned get frustrated and understand that there can be a long period of wait. The other thing is, even if you are going to an expert, remember, this is your life. You are in charge of your health. You are the one who can make decisions. If you go to an expert and that rapport is just not there, I mean, one person can say this doctor is the most wonderful doctor I've been to, and then another one can go to that same doctor and say he was horrible, and I get that all the time. So it's important to find one that you feel comfortable enough with the, not only the expertise, but their ability to communicate with you and work with you as a team.
I agree. No. And one of the things that I've just done recently, I have been referred to a motility specialist, which I was not seeing before. I've only seen the motility specialist a couple of times. When I got out of the hospital after being diagnosed, I was assigned to a regular gastroenterologist who did not specialize in gastroparesis, although he did know some about it. I loved him. He is just an incredible doctor. And we got to the point where he just was honest with me and said, you know, I can't do any more for you here. I think you need to go to the specialist. And because I like my current doctor so well, I have gone to see the specialist, but I've also kept my regular gastroenterologist so that if I need some additional help in between appointments with the specialist, I know I can contact this regular gastroenterologist who has been so kind to me and so helpful, and he will do anything he can to get me in immediately and try to help me with my immediate needs while I'm waiting for the appointment for the specialist. That's just something that I've found is working better for me right now. Might be an option.
This is Randy. I just have a question because I'm on my third motility specialist who doesn't take me seriously. Is there, like, what's the difference between a neurogastroenterologist, which is actually a term I never heard of, versus a motility specialist?
I may need some help with this one, Ms. Mary Angela.
On your own. No.
Yeah.
When doctors become gastroenterologists, well, they become a physician, and then they can continue on to do fellowship in gastroenterology, then they may want to specialize in motility. Well, motility can be very broad. That just means movement, so the movement within your gut. With research that has been going on, they're finding that there is so much connection between the nerves and the muscles of the control of the GI tract, along with all the other systems. So through research, the name has changed. So you'll see a lot of doctors who were originally just called motility being called a neurogastroenterologist. When you go to a neurogastroenterologist, typically you're going to find one who really, really has increased their education, perhaps even has done research, and has the ultimate expertise, as much as expertise that you can have in this field at this particular point in time.
Okay.
Does that make it clearer?
Yeah, thank you. Because I'm on my third mobility specialist. They always send me to one, which sounds great, but it's like either say my pain is in the wrong place or they don't take the nausea seriously, or like I haven't had a good experience with the motility specialist yet.
Yeah, unfortunately, this is Mary Angela again. It's not unusual for patients to have to go through quite a few before you find one that's the right one for you. So it can be challenging. I like what Melissa does. I go to a doctor, a GI doctor, who doesn't have expertise in the motility disorders that I have. However, she'll refer me to somebody, but she understands and is compassionate with me and really gets what I'm going through to the best of her ability. So I feel comfortable enough going to her because I pick and choose now what tests I'm going to have. Another thing that I do, whether it's going to another GI doctor or going to a specialist, because it's not unusual for many people to be going to different specialists, every time I go to a new doctor, I always say, I have a very complex case. I have a long medical history. Are you willing to take me on as a patient? And that gets it right out there at the beginning. And recently I just had a neurologist say, I'm not sure. And that gave me a perspective of, well, I don't think she was willing to take on such a complicated case like me. Ultimately, I never went back to her. I'd rather go to somebody who says yes, even though you may go to an expert and then later on they kind of throw up their hands. They give you what I call the polite boot, and because they no longer know what to do with you. So it can be challenging. Just keep on going to appointments, trying to find doctors that are going to be the right one for you. And I know you have a very complicated case. And it's important for the doctor to be able to really understand that and, based on your background, be able to work with you and not come with preconceived notions about what's going on. And that happens to many of us. They see the record or they see you going in and they go, oh, God, here's a person who's just being uncooperative. She has a history of this, and so I'm just going to blame everything on that particular problem. Not necessarily the case, because other things can be overlooked.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm experiencing all the time. Even with my dietitians, they see the other issues and don't give this enough credence.
You know, I think one of the things you might try, and I can't guarantee this is going to work, but I know that I have gone into doctors before, and I have said, look, I've been diagnosed with this and this and this, but I need somebody who's going to look at this with a fresh perspective. And I'm not saying throw out all the information you have, but hear what I'm saying and look at this in a new way, because I don't think this is accurate. I think something different.
Okay.
Melissa, that's an excellent suggestion. Excellent.
You know, another thing I was thinking about, too, is some of these doctors, like when I started this new specialist, I mean, I'm going to be honest, the first visit was just a disaster, and I thought, this is a huge mistake. I can never come back here. But after I calmed down and my husband told me I was insane, I decided to give him a second try. And the second visit went a lot better than the first, partly because I changed my attitude and my tone, but partly because I think he understood that I, by the second visit, that I knew a little more about my condition than he first assumed I did. And once I was able to talk to him for a longer period of time and get him to understand, you know, I do know something about this, I feel like it went a lot better the second visit. So, you know, I'm not saying there may be times when your first visit, you know, this is not going to work. But there may be times where you decide, well, I'm going to give this one more chance. And it does actually improve, because doctors can be having a bad day. They can be hurried on a certain day. And maybe the next time you go, it won't be that same bad experience. It might be. It might be. And you might say, well, another wasted visit. But, you know, you may conclude that it's worth giving it a second shot, too, especially if you don't have a lot of options. I guess it's another thing to maybe bring up. Do you think that there are certain ways that you can talk to your doctor, or certain things that you can do with your demeanor and your attitude that will help him take you seriously and help him hear you a little better? I think that being prepared going into the meeting is one of those ways. I think if you come in and your records are there and you have maybe a diary of your foods, or you have questions written down for him, I think that maybe that would make an impression on the doctor, not necessarily, but maybe make an impression on him that, hey, this is a person who's going to be active in her health care, who cares enough to try to participate with me to make this better. Do you think that there are certain other things like that that you could do to maybe make the doctor, whether it's right or not, take you a little more seriously? Anybody have any tips for that?
I do, Melissa. This is Brittany. Sorry.
Sorry, Laura.
Go ahead, Britt. I'll go next.
I never go to doctor's appointments alone. I always have somebody with me. And part of that reasoning is because if the doctor says something that upsets me and I, for whatever reason, can't keep a control over my emotions, then I hand it over to whoever is with me, who can then speak to the doctor calmly and not with tears running down their face from frustration, and can kind of voice how I'm feeling in a non-hysterical manner, for lack of a better term here. But I really found that really helps, because, you know, if a doctor says something or does something that upsets you, and you have every right to get upset, especially if you're feeling like junk and you just want to crawl under a rock, you know, the doctor's not going to necessarily, A, be ever able to understand you, or B, maybe not take you as seriously if you're just, you know, dismissing everything that they're saying and going by your emotion. That's when I hand it off to whoever is with me, usually my better half, and I say, okay, now you take over. You know, because he knows me better than, well, probably than I know myself. So, but he knows how I'm feeling. He knows what the point is that I'm trying to get across, and he can deliver that in a more acceptable manner. And I found that really helps.
I just wanted to add that if you've had a bad experience with a doctor and you bring that bad experience, meaning your demeanor, like Melissa was indicating, to every appointment with you, you're setting yourself up for disappointment, because your demeanor is going to make a difference. Mm-hmm. Quite frankly, in the appointment, if you go in there hostile, and I've seen this within a support group too, if people go in with an attitude and that hostile thing, it's going to be very hard for that doctor to be able to help you, because already that doctor's on the defense, and mm-hmm. you know, he's there to help you, or she's there. I don't want to just keep it male. Doctors are there to help, and being hostile or bringing the bitterness of past experiences to every appointment is going to add to you trying to find more doctors because they're not being responsive to you. Mm-hmm. That's all I wanted to add.
Well, this is Laura. Didn't lose the thought for a change. I want to first agree with Brittany on having someone with you. Having somebody that can help you through this one way or another, whether they are just your ride that comes in with you and, you know, is willing to be there, or your soulmate, not only will it make your visits better, it makes your whole disease better for you, in a way. You're not alone. That's just a side note. And then going back to Melissa, with every tip you were using about going into the doctor, maybe having the information, how do you do it? Every single thing that you're saying falls into what I'm going to say. And everybody here, please note, I'm a long-time volunteer. I'm a very long-time patient. I'm not new at this, but I'm just here to help. Something that at this point in my life of 16 years of this disease, I now have a really good team of doctors. It took a really long time. However, now that I have one, something that I found, you know, now that I'm such a great patient, I seem to get all their interns and everybody else before them in the appointment. Hi, they asked me to come in first. And something that every doctor says and every one of these have said of recent, and that's why it kind of is standing out to me, and I'm not trying to brag here in any way, it's not what I'm saying, is that I take ownership of my disease. And they love that. Now, all that means is I understand that this disease belongs to me, no one else. And if I don't work at it, no one else is going to work at it. And, you know, is as in what Mary Angela said, you know, you get what you give a lot of times in the medical field. If you give them help, you give them a diary, you give them concise explanations as opposed to, I'm just in pain, as opposed to I've been having a pain in my lower right abdomen right here every time I eat. You know, things like that. They appreciate that more than anything. And in their eyes, you're taking ownership of your own disease, trying to help yourself. They're going to try and help you twice as much. Just my two cents again.
Anybody else have anything they want to add? What about the kinds of questions that you need answered during doctor's appointments? Because that's something I see a lot of. I don't know what to ask my doctor. I'm going for the first time, you know, in a couple of weeks. What should I ask him? And I would just start off with one recommendation, and hope that other people can add some tips too. But personally, what I wanted to know and what I started with is, what is my diagnosis? How did you conclude this? Could it be something else? You know, why or why not? And do you know the cause of this? And if I were to go in today, I would probably also add to that, please explain my condition to me. Because I really felt like I did not get a good understanding in the hospital of what this condition was and what kind of changes it was going to mean for my life. And I can't go back and redo that now, of course, but if someone asks me, what should I ask the doctor, that would be my recommendation. Please explain this condition to me and why you think it's this and why you think it's not something else. Anybody else have any suggestions about what kind of questions you might ask at that first visit or the first couple of visits?
Melissa, this is Mary Angela. I just wanted to add to what you said, which is when a doctor is explaining something to you, if you still don't understand, you can ask the doctor to repeat it. You can have him repeat it a different way. Or what I typically do is I'll repeat it in my own words, and I'll preface it by saying, is it my understanding that this is what you're saying? Because if you leave the appointment and don't have a grasp on what that doctor said, and I know the emotions can get in there as well, which is why it's good to have somebody else go with you, but it is so important that you leave that appointment very clear, and that goes for if he's going to prescribe medications, you want to know what it's for, if there are going to be any side effects. If it's going to affect the gut, they may not know, but at least you're asking those pointed questions. And medications, if you have questions on it, be sure to ask your pharmacist, not a pharmacy tech, but the main pharmacist there, the doctor of pharmacy, who should be able to give you more guidelines on that medication.
Yeah. I've actually heard from a lot of people who have left the doctor's office after the first or second visit with a medication prescription. They have no idea why it was prescribed. They really are not too sure how to take it. They don't know any of the side effects. You know, I see that as a failure on the doctor's part, but I also see it as something that they could change and have an impact on also the patient, because the doctor should tell you, he should tell you, this is why I think we should go with this medication, this is what it might do to you, these are the short-term, long-term side effects. But if he does not do that, it's ultimately your body. You're going to be the one putting it in there and suffering the consequences. So you have to ask why this medication and what is it going to do to me? And, you know, how do I take it? You can't leave there not knowing those things. I've actually done that where I've left the office, not since being diagnosed with gastroparesis, but prior to that, left the office with a medication and then started thinking when I got home, you know, I don't really think I understand what this medication is for. And at that point, I have either called the doctor back or I've called the pharmacist, as Ms. Mary Angela said, and asked, what exactly is this medication for? Just getting that clarification can make you feel a lot better about it. Anybody else have anything you'd like to add? Questions or something completely off the subject is perfectly fine. Okay.
Melissa, I'm going to go a little off topic, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
And I'm trying to reflect on when I was newly diagnosed, and it took me 5 years at that time to be diagnosed. But I remember the emotional turmoil that I went through, as well as my husband and family. And I think that's so important because the emotions, you can't separate the emotions from the body. And when you're dealing with illness and then you're trying to figure out this new life of yours, hopefully it's not permanent, but if it is, integrating it into your life so that you're not living in fear every day of your life and that you're living a quality life and you're celebrating the times and moments when you are able to do things and feel a little bit better. It's amazing what the body gets used to. So if I were going through what I'm going through now then, it would be a totally different ball game. But because I'm so used to going through these things, it's like, oh, that's normal for me. So we have our new norms. But that emotional part, I think, is so important, and many people don't discuss it. But I think it's a critical point that it's okay to feel a lot of those feelings that you are going through.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I remember being in the hospital before being diagnosed. I spent a week in the hospital after first having symptoms and was diagnosed at the end of that week. But while I was in the hospital, you know, I remember breaking down in front of a nurse and just crying and saying, I think I'm going to die. Am I going to die? You know, and, oh, no, we're not going to let you die. You know? But it's very scary because you don't know what's going on. You don't have answers at this point. And even if you do have the name of your condition, well, what's my prognosis? How is this going to affect my life? And I think those are things that you can bring up with your doctor. And if not, if you're not comfortable talking with your doctor about that, you know, maybe he can recommend a counselor. But even in the doctor's office, I think it's perfectly appropriate to have a discussion about quality of life. You know, these are my goals. These are the things I want to be able to do. How close can you get me to those goals? You know, how close can we get me to those goals? I think those are perfectly appropriate conversations for the doctor's office. You know, sometimes people, my symptom is pain. And when I go into a doctor and he starts talking to me about nausea relief, I don't want to talk about nausea relief. I don't have any issues with nausea since I started taking the one medication I'm on. I want to know what we can do about the pain. That's the issue that's important to me. That's what affects my quality of life. So I think it's okay to let the doctor know that this is your main concern and what you're having the difficulty coping with. Anybody else have anything you want to add or ask? Anything off topic even is perfectly fine.
Boy, everybody's so quiet,
Melissa. They are quiet. They're not like this in the groups either. If there's anybody in here from my groups, I know what you're really like. You're not quiet. So please feel free to speak up anytime. I would say.
Go ahead, Melissa. I'm sorry.
I would say that one other thing I see that's pretty common is after that first visit or the first couple of visits, one of the main questions is, what do I do if I get worse? How do I know when to call the doctor, when to go to the ER, when to just ignore it and, you know, suck it up and deal with it, basically. Those are really hard questions to answer, and I don't think there's one answer to that. I think people, especially in the groups, will come in and think you can say, well, if your blood pressure is this level and your sugar is this level, you know, you need to go to the emergency room or whatever. And I don't think it's always possible. But what I do think is possible is before you leave your doctor's office on those first visits, ask him, what happens if my symptoms get worse? What should I be concerned about? What should I be looking for? And once you have an understanding of that, what happens if I meet those criteria? Who do I call at your office? How quickly can you get me in? Will you tell me if I need to go to the emergency room? I think those are questions that you might want to consider asking before you leave that office too, because so many people, they don't know how to get a hold of their doctor after hours or even if it's possible, and they don't really know what to look for, because when you're throwing up every day, you know, it's bad. How much worse does it have to get before I go to the emergency room or before I call you and say, we need to do something now because this is not working for me? So I would say that's something you would also want to find out at the doctor's office. Anybody?
Melissa, I just want to add to that that I've had some people who have had experiences going to some of the top neurogastroenterologists, and they here in Boston, and there's only one person who's in charge. You have to talk to all of the other people to get to the doctor. That's one problem. But then the other thing is they don't have a covering expert. Oh, there. We're hearing some background. I think an important thing to do is to ask the doctor if there is another covering physician when that doctor is not available who would be able to understand what you have and direct you as to what to do.
Yeah.
the last time I had to go to the hospital, I called up the covering physician, and the physician just said, I don't know. I don't even understand what you have. It's too complicated. Just go to emergency. So that was not a good feeling, So just a little other tip is just see, in case that doctor isn't available, that you have somebody in that medical profession who will be able to guide you through this.
Yeah. I think it's a really difficult thing to figure out, when you should try to treat this at home and when you should go to the emergency room. Those are difficult questions, and you should not feel bad about calling your doctor and saying, here's how I'm feeling. Do I come see you or do I go to the emergency room, if that's an option for you? Because it is hard to know. I mean, you can know the symptoms of dehydration. You can know that you're feeling a lot of pain, but what constitutes an emergency? That's a very difficult thing for people to discern. Anybody else? We're kind of, we're about, I think, 10 minutes away from the end of the program. Anybody out there have a pressing question that you'd like to get in, even off topic, before we go offline here? Nothing at all. Okay. I guess the only other thing that I really wanted to bring up was what to do if you really feel like you've given this a shot with your current doctor and you don't think it's working out. What are some things that you can do to maybe rectify the situation, or when do you say, this is not for me and I just need to get out of here and find a different doctor? People are limited. I understand that. I know that there are areas where there are just not a lot of good doctors available, a lot of specialists. So it's kind of a personal decision, how much you're willing to tolerate from a doctor before you say it's just not worth it, and look for a new one. But I think there may be some steps that you could take before you get to that point. I think it would be appropriate to go in if you're having an issue and you don't think you have a lot of other good options for physicians, to go in and say, I've been seeing you for 6 weeks or whatever, and I'm having some issues with my care, and sort of lay those out in a rational, reasonable manner and see if maybe this is something that the doctor did not intend to happen. Maybe he would be surprised to know that you have some of these concerns, and just maybe give it a last-ditch effort to solve some of those things. I know that in some practices I've been to, the doctor was unaware of some of the things that were going on with his staff that were affecting my care. And once I told him about those, he took steps to try to fix those for me. And I appreciated that. So I do think there are ways to try to address problems short of switching a doctor. But, you make it to the point where they're so serious that you can't resolve them, and you do need to look for another physician. Has anybody been in that situation or have any tips for dealing with that?
I have. And for me, it's all about quality of life. This is Brittany, by the way. And I kind of just go by if seeing that doctor is impacting my quality of life in a negative manner, I do, just like what you said, Melissa, figure out if there's a way that I could talk to them about what my problem is, figure out for myself if there is a way that I could rectify the situation. But if it's something that I just feel very strongly about and I get to that point where every time I have to go see them, it's, I'm having an anxiety attack and it's consuming all my thoughts and, I have a real hard time with it, then that's when I realize I'm doing more harm to myself by seeing this doctor than by letting them go and finding somebody else. And that's okay to do. That's, and sure, it's hard to find doctors, and you may have to put up with that doctor until you get another doctor to cover you. But if you're in that situation where they're just causing you more harm than good, then you have to look out for yourself and say, this person is not good for me. I need to find somebody else and take that step to do it.
Yeah. Anybody else? I think
Melissa,
it's sort of, I'm sorry.
No, this is Mary Angela. Go ahead.
I was just going to add that it's sort of that way with a second opinion for some people, too. They feel very uncomfortable bringing that up to a doctor. I want a second opinion. But you really shouldn't, because these doctors are used to that. They know that. They know it's typical to get a second opinion for many of these things, and most of them will not be offended by that at all. And in fact, I've had doctors recommend a doctor where I could get a second opinion. I think that's just part of standard care, that if it's something very serious or you just want a different perspective, asking for a second opinion is not that big of a deal to most doctors.
Melissa, you just keep reading my mind. Every time I'm going to say something, you say it before me. So we're on the same wavelength.
Anybody else have anything you want to add in the last couple of minutes here? I know we're getting, I think we're about 5 minutes till the hour. Okay. One final thing I would suggest during doctor's visits, that if it's possible, ask your doctor for a list of support resources, dietitians, counselors, online support groups, in-person support groups, websites, anything he might offer you, brochures, papers, anything that can help you better understand your condition. Because I do think it's important that you know the resources available to you, and some doctors are better than others at providing those, but I think it's at least worth bringing it up in the appointment so that you know what your resources are.
Melissa, this is Mary Angela. I just want to be sure that you mention about the TWITA program that's going to be coming up.
Oh, yes. 12:30. Am I right about that? Is it 12:30? At 12:30 today, we are going to be having a Twitter chat. For those of you who are brave enough to be on the Twitter universe, and if you type in the hashtag AGMD, at 12:30, it should take you right to the chat. You will see all the tweets. And we're also going to be talking about the same subject, maybe in a little more detail, and with some different people. And we'd like to see you there. It's something new we're trying. So this is only the second. Is this the second? This is the third one, maybe, we've done.
Third one.
See, I don't even know what I'm doing anymore. But we'd love to have you there. I love Twitter chats. They're a little confusing at first, maybe, if you're not used to it. But once you get involved in them, they're a lot of fun, and you can get a lot of information with the different people participating there. So, yeah, definitely invite you to that at 12:30 today, 12:30 Eastern time. Okay. Well, Ms. Mary Angela, should I wrap this up? Or?
Yep, by all means, you can wrap that up. But before you do, I just want to say that if you are within this program and you're thinking of topics that you would really like to have covered in this that haven't been covered, but you're a little bit shy in even conversing for very much of the time, please feel free to provide your suggestions, because these programs are customized for all of you. And it's important that they be beneficial to what you need. So we're open to suggestions, and certainly you can email them directly to AGMD and for our consideration as a potential topic. That's all I wanted to say. Melissa, you can wind it up.
Absolutely. Okay, well, I would like to thank you all for joining us today. And if you were just listening and didn't feel like speaking this time, greatly appreciate you being here, and I hope that you were able to benefit from some of the tips that were offered today and some of the conversation that took place. And I would encourage you to come back next month and join some of the other meetings that you can find on the AGMD website as well. We have a gastroparesis specific call later in the month, and we invite you to join that, and greatly appreciate you all being here.
Thank you all. Thank you, Melissa. God bless.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.